Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Secretary of State John Kerry is reportedly expressing his frustration with U.S. policy in Syria. The New York Times says Kerry is heard on a recording made last month in New York at a closed-door meeting with a group of Syrian civilians, complaining that his diplomatic efforts have not been backed by the threat of military action by his own government. Meantime, Syrian and rebel forces continued to clash Saturday in the city of Aleppo, where 250,000 people, including many children, are trapped. The WHO's Rick Brennan blames the ongoing airstrikes by Russia and the Syrian government for the situation in Aleppo.
The two largest hospitals in Aleppo were deliberately targeted and are now not functioning, drastically reducing the capacity of health workers in the city to provide life-saving medical care for many innocent children, women, and other innocent civilians.
The Russian bombing campaign in Syria marked its first anniversary on Friday, with the Kremlin spokesperson saying their goal is to eliminate radical Islamic extremists and protect Russia from the spread of an international terrorism. A car bombing targeting Somali security forces rocked the Somali capital Mogadishu Saturday, killing at least two people and wounding several others. A security official told VOA's Somali division that a car filled with explosives was detonated outside the Blue Sky restaurant. Shortly after the attack, the al-Qaeda-affiliated al-Shabaab terror group took responsibility. In a statement published through the group's platform on the encrypted Telegram messaging application, the statement said the group carried out the attack to strike at guards who work at a nearby prison. This is VOA News. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has apparently launched a plan to discredit his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton, by attempting to make former President Bill Clinton's sexual indiscretions a central issue of the presidential campaign. In an interview Friday with the New York Times, Trump said he believes the negative attacks will help him win over more women voters, although polls show two-thirds of women view him unfavorably. The Clinton campaign has apparently tried to preempt Trump's attacks by releasing audio of Bill Clinton discussing his marriage with Hillary. A poll by Real Clear Politics shows Clinton leading Trump by an average of 3 percentage points among likely voters nationwide. Hungarians will vote on Sunday in a referendum which gives the government the popular support it seeks to oppose any future plans by the European Union to resettle asylum seekers in the country. People are already concerned about the referendum's outcome even before the votes are cast.
Yeah, I really like that because I don't want migrants here.
The referendum question asks whether voters wish to accept European Union imposed quotas, with the government urging citizens to vote no. Powerful Hurricane Matthew continuing to move northward up the Atlantic, with a large amount of rain expected on parts of the Caribbean, including Jamaica, Haiti, and Cuba. It's expected to pass through eastern Cuba and the Bahamas Tuesday into Wednesday. Authorities say the storm claimed the life of one person, a man, in Colombia. Matthew is expected to remain a powerful storm through Sunday. U.S. weather forecasters say Matthew is the strongest hurricane over the Atlantic since Felix in 2007. Forecasters say it's too early to tell how the hurricane will impact Florida. Tens of thousands of Indians are taking advantage of a sort of amnesty for not reporting billions of dollars in income. Authorities say in the past 4 months, Indians have come forward with $9.5 billion in income not reported or taxed. Under a government plan announced early this year, Indians who declared so-called black money during the four-month period that ended Friday would pay 45% in taxes to the state, but avoid criminal prosecution. Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who vowed to curb tax avoidance when he was elected in 2014, congratulated those who chose to declare their black money on Black Monday, money that is, on Saturday. And European Union environment ministers in Brussels have unanimously approved the ratification of the 2015 Paris Agreement on climate change. For the climate deal to take effect, 55 countries must sign on to it. A month later, the deal would go into effect. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We have found in Kojo Mensah-Susu as a very competent partner by making him the running mate to our flag bearer, Dr. Nana Mrs. Kunadajma Rollins.
A former Ghanaian first lady and a presidential candidate chooses a running mate ahead of the upcoming December polls.
First of all, the new electoral code has been approved by Parliament. We believe that this new electoral code is a death threat actually to democracy in Mali.
Malian opposition parties demonstrate Saturday to demand political reforms.
It is normal that the government of Burundi is actually attempting to hide the truth of what is happening in Burundi.
And a civil society group welcomes a United Nations decision to investigate human rights abuses in Burundi. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A former Ghanaian First Lady and opposition National Democratic Party, or NDP, presidential candidate has chosen Michael Kojo Mensah-Susu as a running mate ahead of the December 7 general election. Nana Kunedu Ajima Rawlings officially filed her nomination papers Thursday to represent her party in the elections. This, as a running mate, is scheduled to appear before party supporters this weekend at an event in the Volta region. Mohamed Frimpong, General Secretary for the NDP, told me the party is confident ahead of the elections.
In conforming to the guidelines of the Electoral Commission, we have found in Kojo Mensah-Susu as a very competent partner by making him the running mate to our flag bearer, Dr. Nana Mrs. Kunadajma Rollins. So we completed the filing of our nominations with the EC yesterday. And we hope now that our campaign program will be on course for the electoral activity, paving the way for our overwhelming victory in the upcoming 2016 election.
Now, what is going to be different this time, particularly when during the 2012 general election, Nana Kunedu Ajima Rawlings said some people within the ruling party or government sabotaged their efforts to legally file her nominations with the EC? What was different this time?
Well, this time around, those she trusted and had been treacherous, you know, in the assignment given to them, have all been virtually gotten rid of. And the new set of National Executive Committee are very dedicated, and we are committed to the cause of the National Democratic Party. The difference is that we are very confident, and we do not want to leave anything to chance at all. And this is exactly what we did. This time around, we toured all the 10 regions of Ghana, making sure we made contact with all the signatories that had to endorse her nomination.
Did you pay your nomination fees as demanded by the Electoral Commission of Ghana?
Exactly. When we got there, we had all our requirements ready, including a banker's draft for 50,000 Ghana cedis. But it was the ruling of the commission that since the issue was under interlocutory injunction, we could keep it, until that matter was determined.
Some supporters of the ruling National Democratic Congress, from which your party, some members of your party defected to form the NDP, are saying that the NDP was purposely set up to be spoilers of chances of the NDC to win re-election with the presidential election, and that the NDP has similar social democratic policies as the NDC. What do you say to that?
As a matter of fact, they have deviated from the course and then the ideal of social democratic principles, and that we want to get these whole ideals back properly grounded, and they had turned into a cultic oligarchy that we are trying to get rid of. So they can have any imagination to themselves. We are popular. We are a grassroots party. They are no longer grassroots. They are elitist now. And for that matter, they do not really conform to the ideals that gave birth to the National Democratic Congress. And therefore, we want to purge this kind of deviation by making sure that at least we can get on board, you know, on our new vessel, all the remnants and the people who are like-minded and think that, yes, this deviation is right in the National Democratic Congress.
Recent polls show that the NDP seems not to be doing very well nationally when it comes to either presidential or parliamentary candidate. Now, some people are suggesting that perhaps the NDP is planning to form an alliance ahead of the election. What is your take on some of these speculations in Ghana?
Well, definitely, just like you rightly put it, it is a speculation. At the end of the day, I think the performance on the ground and what really transpires, you know, during this election will prove the skeptics wrong.
Mohamed Frimpong is the General Secretary of the Ghanaian Opposition National Democratic Party, or NDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Malian opposition parties with representation in parliament protest Saturday to demand political reforms from the government. The demonstrators are also demanding the return from exile of former President Amadou Toumani Touré, who was overthrown in a military coup in 2012. This after President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta's government announced treason charges against the ousted leader. For more regarding the opposition demands, I reach Zoumanou Sako, a former Malian prime minister in the capital, Bamako.
We support this demonstration. We support the motives. First of all, the new electoral code has been approved by parliament. We believe that this new electoral code is a death threat, actually, to democracy in Mali. Because it is such as only wealthy people, billionaires, and in the context of money, only drug traffickers and corrupt government officials can raise the amount of money that now you have to put on the table to be able to run for president. Second, the electoral code also sow the seed for the territorial divisions of Mali and then play right into the hands of the separatist Tuareg movement still in control of Kidal. And besides, this demonstration is meant, you know, to express the need for former President Amadou Toumani Touré to come back to Bamako, to Mali, to his home country.
Why wouldn't these political parties, including your formation, hold negotiations with the government to address some of these concerns you have expressed?
You know, we have, from the very outset, we have been insisting on the need for President Keïta and government, you know, to open up a channel for dialogue with all political parties. Until about 2 or 3 weeks ago, they have been adamant, you know, to continue running the country as it was their personal property, not listening to anyone, making one blunder after another. So since they have not been able to listen, you know, to polls, to the press communiques, and to opposition parties in parliament, we have been making the same case. So we have a democracy right, you know, to make the truth, you know, to make our case. And we hope that this time, President Keïta and his government will listen.
The former President Touré, who is outside the country now, was seen as a polarizing figure, and that his actions really led to the coup d'etat that destabilized Mali. They blame him for some of the problems, the security problems Mali is facing. Why isn't it good for the government to set an example to future leaders not to destabilize the country anymore by charging him with treason?
No. I think we all agree that President Touré made a number of mistakes and bad judgments regarding the then evolving crisis in the north. he allowed certain situations that could have stopped then the fact to the very beginning to develop and to get out of hand. But still, we think that he's not truly a specialist. He's a polarizing figure. He's a coup d'etat. The coup d'etat of March 2012 is creating this division among the Malian political class and the political rights. We believe that he's coming back to Mali and on the contrary, contributes to strengthening national union, national cohesion.
So what do you think are the best steps forward to return Mali to a peaceful, democratic system in West Africa?
One of the ways to try is to precisely convene this national conference. We call it the National Congress. As long as the political class and society are not able to come together, speak in one voice and look in the same direction, to save Mali, unless you are able to do that, I feel that the situation will continue in combat with the world. But the head of state has a critical role to play. He is the one who should be taking the lead, sending out the political signal that is prepared to listen to all voices, including voices from the opposition. Because the opposition members are Malian citizens, like anybody else, you know. We all have to come together, but on the basis of national interest, not on the basis of anybody's personal interest or political interest, but national interest. That's the only thing we forward.
Zoumana Sako is a former Malian prime minister. He spoke with me from Bamako. The leader of the Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society, or FOSIC, in Burundi, has welcomed the United Nations Human Rights Council's decision to set up a commission to investigate human rights violations and torture in Burundi. This after UN investigators released a report which accused the government of supporting systematic human rights abuses. The government denies the accusations. Vital Nshimirimana, leader of the civil society group FOSIC, told me it was about time an investigation was conducted to punish the masterminds of human rights violations in Burundi.
We welcome the resolution for the Commission of Inquiry for Burundi because this resolution was voted following the proposal by the human rights experts that documented the human rights violation in Burundi, and they find it out that crimes are committed by state agents and the Imbonerakure militiamen and the non-state actors.
But Vital, the government has consistently rejected accusations that it is behind the killings and that this can be attributed to those people who want to destabilize the country and those people are to blame for the alleged killings. What do you say to that?
Yeah, it is normal that the government of Burundi is actually attempting to hide the truth of what is happening in Burundi. Because what is committed as a crime, as international crime, is backed by the government and is committed by a handful of very powerful people, including the top officers in the army and the top officers in the government, who, among other things, are spreading hate speech, inciting to violence.
The report expressed concern about a possible civil war, but government officials have said that things are normal, the situation is calm, and that they are negotiating with all forces to ensure a smooth process, and that this is a figment of the imagination of some opposition forces and civil society groups like yours.
Now, the entire world is assisting to a pattern of genocide in Burundi or some crimes against humanity which are committed by state agents. We are saying this because one of the key elements, the indicator happening right now, is the persecution targeting members of the minority ethnic group, members of the army. And we know that from the constitution of Burundi and the Arusha Peace Agreement, security forces are supposed to be formed of 50% of Hutu and 50% of Tutsi to prevent genocide and exclusion, which is not the case today. All of these balances are broken, and they are broken for the purpose of allowing extremist Hutu to actually persecute Tutsi and commit crimes against Tutsi and Hutu who are against the state term.
Foreign Minister Alain Nyamitwe and Presidential Special Advisor are denying that there is any case of Hutu against Tutsi in the country and that those accusations are without merit.
Well, the conflict in Burundi is basically a political conflict, but as in the past, the conflict has been manipulated by the government to try to divert the understanding by several stakeholders, including the international community, presenting the conflict as a Tutsi-backed conflict, trying or seeking to overthrow a Hutu president. And this is a matter of fact, where when we read a statement of the ruling CNDD-FDD party, when it starts that these are the nostalgic who want to overthrow the population-elected government.
Vital Nshimirimana is the leader of the Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society. He spoke with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. There are reports of ongoing arrests of civil society activists and members of opposition parties, as well as the burning of the offices of political parties in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo. There are new concerns that this political crisis could spiral into a cycle of prolonged violence and unrest in the weeks and months ahead. Sisko Chikala is an independent political analyst. My colleague Douglas Impoga reached him in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, to find out if anything can be done to avoid further escalation of the crisis.
Yes, there is a way. The only way is actually to have everyone in this political dialogue which is going on. Because of lack of inclusivity and having a bigger group like the Rassemblement, which is a group of parties like UDPS of Etienne Tshisekedi and the G7 group supporting Moïse Katumbi and other main opposition, like Dynamic of Opposition. So without having them in this dialogue, so whichever decision that will be taken will be contested by them, and they can rally people in the streets to oppose any decision. Another actor that you should know is the Catholic Church, whose representative left the dialogue. And this is one of the biggest networks in terms of civil society in the country.
To what extent is the ambiguity or lack of certainty on the coming elections a factor in this political crisis?
It's one of the biggest factors because this is dividing people. The issue around the calendar can be solved through a consensus. However, it's hard to solve the issue around Kabila. Because for the radical opposition, which is the Rassemblement, Kabila is trying to delay the election so that he can stay in power. So they would not want to have a consensus whereby you'll have Kabila as head of state from the 20th of December when his term is done. While Kabila group is suggesting to have Kabila stay in power for a transition toward the organization of the elections.
Yeah, but hasn't he, Mr. Kabila, played the time factor very well?
Yes, this is why he organized this dialogue and had a part of the opposition to join him to support that strategy. But on the other end, the opposition, which is out of the dialogue, is still maintaining that from 20th December, he will never be recognized as the president of the state. So it will still be hard for him to actually have a sort of legitimacy from that date.
Legitimacy aside, how possible is it to arrange a free and fair elections in the current situation?
In the current situation, it will not be possible. It will need to take time because of this political uncertainty and the lack of trust between various actors will not be able to help in the situation.
Is there anything the international community can do, because the U.S., for instance, has sanctioned some officers there? Is there anything the international community can do to help calm the situation?
Yes, they can put some pressure. As you've seen, the United States having sanctions on police generals and generals of the army and trying to isolate the Kabila regime. There are pressures from other European countries and the UN requesting for independent investigation on the killing. Yes, that can help, but I don't think it will help much because a lot of things have changed since the 60s, where you have these powers imposing a lot of things on Africa. Today, you would see they tried in Burundi, they failed in Congo, Brazzaville, did not work. So in the case of Congo, I think regional powers will play a bigger role than those international powers. They seem to be far from the real action in the Congo. If countries like Rwanda, Uganda, South Africa, Angola, and Congo-Brazzaville play some kind of pressure, that will help in the situation.
You mentioned the neighboring countries to DR Congo, but most of them seem to have taken the route he's trying to take of staying in power longer. So would that help the people or Kabila himself?
I think they are supporting, the regional powers are supporting the status quo, so which is helping Kabila.
Cisco Chiskala is an independent political analyst. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Nairobi. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports that 100,000 people are effectively trapped by violence in the South Sudanese town of Yei. It warns that with no one allowed in or out, the town could soon face a food shortage. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says it fears Yei is being dragged into South Sudan's civil war. Until recently, the town located in central Equatoria State has been largely spared from the violence and attacks that have gripped the country since December 2013. But the UNHCR says conditions for the inhabitants of Yei and surrounding areas have deteriorated since renewed conflict between government and rebel forces broke out in July. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says the situation came to a head earlier this month when more than 30,000 people in surrounding areas fled into Yei following deadly attacks and looting of property. He tells VOA that government forces are surrounding the town.
They are restricting access into the town and also preventing people from leaving, presumably because they suspect them of siding with opposition forces. Now people are not allowed to leave, to go and tender their fields and their crops, and this potentially could be disastrous.
If farmers are unable to reach their fields, Spindler says harvests will rot, the upcoming planting season is likely to be missed, and there will be no crops next year. He says the displaced already are feeling the sting of having had to abandon their homes. He says food prices are soaring as commodities disappear from the market.
Many internally displaced people have reported that their food stocks have been looted. Two local hospitals are functioning at reduced capacity. Lack of high-energy food for malnourished children and breastfeeding mothers is becoming critical.
Spindler says aid agencies in Juba are responding to this emergency by gathering food, non-food items, drugs, and other essential supplies. However, the operation is stalled as aid agencies wait to be granted access to Yei. The situation adds to the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, where some 2.5 million people have been displaced from their homes since the conflict began. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
My brain, yo, beautiful lady, yo, that kind of African lady, yo.
Aye,
see. I sing in the song for Panya,
aye.
And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya,
anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya, eh.
Panya, Thank you. Your body, oh. You're my champion, lover, lover. If anyone will train, you know, I'll cut. Your body really nice, baby, silicone. There is some bad girls for Patagos. And you already know that I'm Patagos. But we just want to have fun. But we just want to burn castles. For sure. Cause you give me your love and you give me your heart. Baby, I will never tear it apart, yeah. Only you they make me happy, yo. Only you they make me happy, yo. And I feel like a celebrity, yo. Nobody they control my body, yo. Ocho, eh. Girl, you rock my mind. Ocho. So nice to draw you my career. There's something about you, girl, girl, girl. Say, 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 girl, I just want to love you right. But it's so better. We just want to have fun. Better. We just want to burn castles. Cause you give me your love and you give me your heart. Baby, I will never tear it apart, yeah. Only you, they make me happy, yo.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Nick Ivanov, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if the owner of a calabash calls it a worthless calabash, others will join him to use it to pick rubbish. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Climate change is a defining issue of our time and one where U.S. leadership has made a real and measurable difference. Confronting this challenge will require a sustained global effort to ensure that our planet remains a safe and livable place for future generations. In the words of Secretary of State John Kerry,
"These high temperatures are already having consequences. Already people dying in the heat, already people moving because of lack of water, already we have climate refugees on this planet, already we see more powerful storm surges, already we see lower productivity in many industries and serious impacts on public health and well-being. We know there are diseases that used to die because it got cold, and it doesn't get cold. We know that species are moving, and that the ecosystem of the planet, including the oceans, is changing."
The good news is that we still have a chance to prevent some of the worst impacts of climate change and adapt to those changes that we can't prevent, said Secretary of State Kerry at a United Nations event celebrating countries who have joined or will join the Paris Agreement. The agreement is an enormous step in the right direction. I am confident we will bring this agreement into force this year, and that message will demonstrate to the world just how serious we are, said Secretary of State Kerry. In Paris, a remarkable thing happened. More than 185 countries came together. More than 175 signed on. In Paris, we began to rewrite the ending of this story. It will be a story of how the world came together in the greatest aspirations of United Nations, of this institution, to embrace this moment and to safeguard the future of this planet for generations to come. That is this mission, nothing less, and we intend to get the job done.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.